This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Here's to quitting. Quitting the couch for a quick run. Quitting the snooze button for a morning workout. Quitting giving up after 2 weeks. You see, staying committed to your fitness goals isn't easy. But with Apple Watch, you don't have to do it alone. Because Apple Watch gives you real-time motivation, plus advanced metrics that track all your workouts, so you can stick to your New Year's fitness resolutions. And once and for all, quit quitting with Apple Watch. iPhone 11 or later required.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to One Nation. Hope you had a fantastic Christmas. I'm Brian Kilmeade. You're going to love the show tonight. Thanks so much for making room for us. We've got Mike Rowe with us. You're going to love his breakdown of the blue-collar worker and what does it do with AI. We're going to also have the CEO of Ford on with him. We got James Woods. He goes into his business, the effect of AI, and so much more about what it means to be in Hollywood today as a conservative, as well as Alexi Lalas. Is there any bigger event coming up this year than the World Cup? This guy starred in it. He's now one of the most famous broadcasters commenting on it. He's going to talk about what the U.S. has to do to actually be successful. And dare I say, the future of youth sports, he's worried like I am too. But first, let's talk about the economy. That's what's going to really be pushing what's happening in 2026 on so many levels. Now, if President Trump's programs work, he's got a great shot at bucking history and being the fourth major president in the last 100 years to keep the House, keep the Senate, and let's just say not lose seats. If he doesn't, he'll pay the price.
I inherited a mess, and I'm fixing it. When I took office, inflation was the worst in 48 years, and some would say in the history of our country, which caused prices to be higher than ever before, making life unaffordable for millions and millions of Americans.
And if he loses that, he'll lose his economic momentum. And, of course, they'll talk impeachment city again. That's what the Democrats will do. The economy has grown at a stunning 4.3% in the third quarter, faster than the previous quarter. That's an outstanding number by any means. People are going to start seeing that and the effects in their paychecks, too, because wages are expected to rise. No tax on tips, remember. No tax on overtime, Social Security, big tax break, investments from abroad, investment accounts for newborns, and they're supposed to be bigger than ever tax returns. That should juice and stimulate the economy. Perhaps we need to look into the past for insurances on the future and heed the advice of none other than Ronald Reagan himself.
We can do it by slowly but surely working our way back to prosperity that will mean jobs for all who are willing to work and fulfillment for all who still cherish the American dream. We can do it, my fellow Americans, by staying the course.
That's who Donald Trump needs. He needs that fun music, that upbeat music. Meanwhile, a CBS poll on the impact of Trump's policies on you financially and the 2026 expectations. Let's break it down. 18% say they're no better financially in 2025 than they were in 24, but 27% feel as though things will be better in 26. 50% now financially worse off, but 45% are optimistic they'll be better off in 26. Why? Will they ever be better? Will they actually be better off than they think? Let's bring in senior fellow at the American First Policy Institute, Stephen Moore. Stephen, there's some positive numbers. When do you think people feel it?
Well, first of all, Brian, they are positive numbers, and we're seeing almost every single economic indicator pointing in the right direction and in a big way. By the way, that 4.3% growth rate, that's a big, big number, much higher than we ever saw under Joe Biden. So I would say to people, I like the idea. Stay the course. That I remember when Reagan said that in late 1982, and then we had the biggest boom in American history. I think that's exactly what we're headed for in 2026 with the tax cut really kicking in. And you're so right to bring that up, Brian. No tax on tips. No tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security. And even for just, right. You know, people don't have necessarily overtime, they're going to see a big tax cut starting in January as less money is withheld from their paycheck.
Stephen, there's a couple of things. What I heard in the first or second quarter after Liberation Day in April is there was a flurry of economic activity because people wanted to buy things before the tariffs kicked in. They can't say that now in the third quarter. Because the tariffs are set, some trade deals will come in with India and the USMCA, but you can't say that people are trying to get ahead of tariffs anymore, can you?
No. Listen, what's happening right now and what's really very inspiring about this economic recovery we're in right now, it's being driven by investment. Businesses are investing at record pace in the United States in terms of new technology, plant, equipment, machinery. And that's the seed corn, Brian, of a rising, prosperous economy when businesses are investing in their workers and their factories. And we're seeing record amounts of that. Now, Trump is saying he has deals to bring $8 trillion in the United States. I think that's maybe a little bit of an exaggeration, but even if it's $1 trillion, that's an enormous amount of money to be invested here in the United States. And why is that? Because this is the best country right now at this moment for investors to invest in.
So I'm looking at this CBS poll now that asked voters grade the economy. 5% gave it an A, 20% gave it a B, 26% gave it a C, 25% gave it a D, 24% gave it an F. Where would you grade it, Stephen?
Well, first of all, that 50% that gave a D or F, those are basically Biden voters. You know, so if we could have the Garden of Eden right now and they'd still say the economy is terrible because they don't like Trump. Now, Trump, as you know, Brian, says A++ for his economic record this year. I'm going to give him an A-. I wish we had concentrated more on cutting government spending and waste. But for the most part, right. This is an economy that is on the right track and things are going to even be better in 2026.
So, Steve, I looked at your column and you focused on education for the first time, and it really caught my attention. You're really concerned about math and reading scores across the country. You talk about the abysmal math scores. You talk about the abysmal reading scores. What's going to change? Because we've been watching this descent for too long. Do you have a way to change this?
Well, first of all, you're right. I'm angry about it. But my question is, why isn't every single American angry about our failing public school system and the way the teachers' unions have really imposed their will on our schools? And we have over half of the kids in many school districts that cannot read or write or do math. We cannot succeed as an economy if we're graduating from kids with diplomas they cannot read. So everybody should be angry. Right. We need an abrupt change in education. And Trump has a great idea that he is putting into action, which is more school choice. Let every child, regardless of their race, their income, their zip code, every single child should have access to a great school, and Trump is funding that.
Yeah, put the phones away and go back to writing again, even iPads. We have to get rid of it. It's not the kids' fault. Things have happened. They thought it'd make things better. It actually made things worse. Stephen, thanks so much. We'll look forward to getting your economic forecast throughout this very exciting 2026.
Thank you, Brian.
Meanwhile, artificial intelligence is transforming the economy faster than anyone predicted, raising fears for some about white-collar job losses, while at the same time igniting a surge in demand for skilled tradesmen and women, manufacturing jobs booming across the country. Are we preparing the next generation for the jobs that actually exist? I recently sat down with Jim Farley, CEO of Ford Motor Company, and the CEO of MicroWorks, Mike Rowe, who's been warning about the lack of skilled labor in this country and the need to fill those jobs. Watch. Great to have you both together. And I just want to make this an open forum. Mike, the blue collar jobs, you're nodding your head. You knew these blue jobs are coming. Is there a way to train our people to fill those positions?
Sure. It would be inelegant to take some sort of victory lap on your fine program. But, you know, we've been beating this drum for 17 years now. The thing I think I'd like to start with is a trip to Texas 2 weeks ago. I finally got a tour of one of those data centers. And while I was there, and I swear I'm not making this up, I ran into three electricians. All of them are under 30. All of them had been poached three times that year.
Wow.
All of them were making north of $240,000. Now, that means something else is happening, to your point, while all these other things are happening at the same time. And in this case, I think it simply means that supply and demand have simply got to that place where there's no denying it. We are in such acute need of more electricians, more welders, more HVAC people.
I'm really glad that we get the chance to talk about this on such an important show. You know, at Ford, we have a shortage of factory workers, but we have a shortage of technicians and dealerships. As Mike said, those jobs, even though it takes a while to get up to speed, you know, we have about 400,000 people that we need. Right this morning at Ford, we had 6,000 stalls that were open with no mechanics in them to fix our vehicles. The jobs are getting harder. They require technical support, innovation. So I think at Ford we'll solve this problem, right? Because we're a fortunate company and we're committed to America. But the issue is, what is the little guy going to do?
Yes.
The plumber, electrician that owns our Super Duty. What are they going to do if they don't have the resources at Ford? They're barely getting through the day with a lot of red tape. For them to try to find the next generation, as Mike said, it's really hard. And we have to help them. Companies like Ford have to help. We have a lot more work to do as a whole industry.
You know what they say, Mike, this reminds everybody of 2003, because we changed telecoms. You know, we went from the hard line to the cell phone, and we lost maybe 171,000 jobs, and everyone reconfigured and readjusted. I don't know if you remember back then, you were probably on PM Magazine, but but it's something that you can't blame any party for. This is advancement. Should we be welcoming this? And should we as workers be responsible for adjusting, even if you got that Harvard degree?
I don't think it has much to do practically with whether you welcome it or not. It's standing at the door, and it's not going to knock. It's coming in. And yeah, I remember 2003. What I don't remember, but what I'm pretty sure did happen, was our country pivoted from an agrarian industry or economy into an industrial age, and from an industrial age really into kind of a financial age. And now we're going from this financial age, whatever that is, into clearly a digital age. And we're building the plane in the air. And there is no playbook for this. I think Jim's challenges and experiences at Ford are similar yet different from, say, Alex Karp's over at Palantir. Now, what I'm interested in, you know, Alex has his own little meritocracy school that he's building there. He's recruiting bright kids straight out of high school and teaching them what he needs them to know. They're also exposing them to the liberal arts, which I just think is brilliant and fascinating. And I know that Jim has talked about building trade schools again within the Ford organization in order to satisfy this need. To me, that's leadership. You know, and each company is going to have to kind of figure out this Rubik's cube in their own way, which is why I don't think there's a general playbook. But it is super interesting to hear how the smart people among us are going to solve this.
And Jim, before you answer, I have Alex Karp, a quote from Palantir's CEO, co-founder, and he says this: AI is going to help many people with vocational training, but no college degree, make a lot more money because of the value being created. So to tell somebody who gets that master's degree from Yale that you probably would have been better off from high school going to a trade school, is that the message for parents watching, for 11th graders watching?
Yes, it should be. I believe we put too much emphasis on a 4-year degree in the United States You look back two or three generations, like my grandfather, he got his job at Ford. He put my mom through college. I went through college. You know, we have a whole, as Mike said, you said, we have a whole generation here that has a new opportunity. And I think our society puts such a pressure. Now, Mike has been battling this with everything he's done for many, many years and being a spotlight on this. But now, as he said, it's a real thing. Road construction takes longer. People waiting longer for stuff to get fixed on their house. You know, if we want this to change as a society, we have to ask the question, do we really want to put this much pressure on the next generation to get a four-year degree? This is a live debate in my family. My kid learned welding over the summer as a high schooler, and he asked me, Dad, you think it's worth going to college? The CEO of Ford, my wife and I had a big debate about it. I actually asked Mike about it, and I'm fine with whatever he wants to do.
When we talk about innovation, you talk about China. Mike, I'm sure you've talked to Jim about this. Jim, what did you see in China that almost unnerved you in terms of how advanced they were?
I go to China regularly, obviously, but during COVID, something happened that I think, you know, many of us were not expecting. They made huge leaps and bounds. China wants to be the manufacturing, heavy manufacturing source for the world. They now have twice as many car plants as their local market can absorb. They want to export all of that to create these great jobs. We are in a war for manufacturing now globally. Now, the Trump administration has done a lot of good things here. You know, now we have a real tailwind behind companies like Ford, who make 80% of our products in the U.S. But we need to do a lot more. When I went to China, I came back completely different perspective. They want every one of our jobs in our plants.
Wow. And Mike, what does that make you think? We're competing for workers here, and then we have a country that could take us out manufacturing wise.
If I had like one of those big red bells in a fire department, I'd hit it with a hammer. I'd ring the alarm. This is it. Jim, you can't overstate it, and you can't put it in one vertical. We have to fight this thing on every front. And the front that I'm most interested in is the reason I'm on your show. It's the reason I come on whenever you invite me. We have to keep this front and center. I'm rooting for the president. I love the idea of 2 million new jobs in manufacturing, but you got to admit, when there are 480,000 openings right now that we can't fill, the math is getting a little hinky. Five retire, two come in. Five out, two in, over a decade now. We need to get in front of it. And as I told Jim at our last meeting, I'm like, not a week goes by where somebody doesn't call me to say, Mike, do you know where the tradesmen are? We're going out of our mind trying to hire. And I say, yeah, I do. They're in the eighth grade.
Jim Farley, Mike Rowe, it was our privilege to have you on. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
So next, AI is changing the movie game. Legendary actor James Woods is here on the future of Hollywood, and he's not optimistic. That'll be next. But be sure to catch me on stage February 14th. I'm very optimistic. History, Liberty, and Laughs streaming on Fox Nation. I'll be in Fort Myers, Florida, February 14th, Reno, Nevada, May 30th. More dates to come. If you like patriotism, motivation, inspiration, it's all wrapped up in one, and dare I say, fun. Don't move. Special edition of One Nation. You're in the middle of it. Nowhere to go. If you want to love me, you don't need a rope, you just need to know. So we just told you how artificial intelligence is transforming the workforce. It's also transforming Hollywood. AI in movies changing the landscape of movie making and the art of acting. I recently sat down with Oscar-nominated actor James Woods, known for his sharp intellect, guy's fantastic, and commanding presence on screen, to get his take. Watch. I know there are certain things built into contracts, but do you worry about the impact on AI? And what have you seen already, how it affects the movies that we watch? You mentioned a little on the stunts, but what about for actors getting jobs?
I can tell you that AI is the end of human actors. I'm adamant about this, and people say, oh, come on, you're overreacting. You know, you remember in the 30s, when the silence went to talkies, people said, oh, it's a fad. When television came in, I won't replace movies. When digital photography came in, I was with my beloved late brother, Mike, and I said, you know, we went by one of those photomat booths. I don't even know if you remember them. You used to drop your film off and you get it the next day and so on. I said, I wonder if they'll ever go out of business. And he said, oh, no, they'll be there. People are, you know, not going to. You know, I think there is always going to be film. And, you know, there are a few aficionados that like it. Boom, they were gone in 6 months. If you have to pay an actor $70 million and have to deal with his agent and his entourage and his makeup, all this stuff, and you can have a computer-generated character, well, right now it's not going to work because we have movie stars we like. We love brilliant actors like Brad Pitt. I love Brad Pitt. We love, you know, all Meryl Streep, all these great actors because we grew up with them. But when the next generation grows up with a computer-generated model, and believe me, they will be as realistic as people. I've watched that, you know, Moore's Law. Every 18 months, man, I think it's Moore's Law, things double in their ability in the digital world. When they can look as real as people and you don't have to deal with their agents and their publicists and having to fly them to promote things and so on, and you can just churn out content 24 hours a day at a really cheap price. You know, when Steven Spielberg did the first Jurassic Park, people said, this is amazing. It'll never be created. How could he have done it? He goes, in 5 years, 14-year-old kids will be doing this on their Macintosh. And he was right. Maybe not by, maybe it was a couple years more or a couple years less. But it's astonishing how quickly it's changing. Right. You know, you go on Instagram now, and there are these, you know, sexy women walking around, and I'm thinking, who looks like that? And it's like, it's all computer generated. They're AI figures, and I thought,
I know.
What is that?
It's the age we're in. It's affecting everything, and unfortunately, it's affecting what we're going to be watching when we're just trying to not think about what's going on in the world. James Woods, thanks so much.
You know, Brian,
go ahead.
But Brian, let me just say one thing, if I may. You know, I'm going to do a little pitch here, but it's for a reason. I write lyrics, and my friend Shooter Jennings writes the music, and my friend Bob Wayne did it for the second album. I have an album out right now called Tombstone Opera. We actually want to put a sticker on it and saying, no auto-tune, no AI, this is real musicians playing real music. And one of the things that Shooter and I talked about was the uniqueness of the music, and I'm proud to say the lyrics that I've written are such that I don't think AI could ever do it because it's very... It just has an authentic feel to it. Right. And, you know, a lot of times I'll look at movies. I know what the casting is. You know, people say, why don't you want to work anymore? I go, the older white guy, I wonder if he's going to be the villain. Of course he's going to be the villain. We know who the leads are because it's all done certain kind of casting, you know. And in music, if you say, I want to listen to the country channel, I want to listen to the jazz channel, the music, it's like, you can almost predict it. You know, you go on a country music song, and it's like, yeah, I'm from West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee, whatever southern state it is. My girlfriend left me, you know, the old joke. If you want to, you play a country music record backwards, you know, you get your wife back, you get your dog back, and you sober up. It's like, you know, everything now is just the same kind of rhythm, and it's very hard to be unique and authentic. And when AI comes in, it's going to be the same old stuff.
But it
in
won't.
In music.
Right.
In movies, it's not going to be a good thing, I don't think.
It won't have soul, and it won't have James Woods, and I won't mind. I'll sweep a sticker on everything. This, ladies and gentlemen at home, was not AI. I'm really Brian, and that's really James. Thanks so much, James Woods.
Thank you, sir.
Next, youth sports in a crisis mode across the country, and kids are being priced out of playing in many cases. Alexi Lalas is here talking about that, as well as the World Cup. Don't move.
Welcome to Fox News Live. I'm Mike Emanuel in Washington. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to meet with President Trump in Florida in the coming hours. Foreign policy experts say his visit is crucial for the future of the Israel-Hamas ceasefire. Mediators hope to move into the second phase of October's agreement. It calls for Israel to fully withdraw from Gaza and Hamas to lay down its weapons. An interim authority would also govern the Palestinian Authority. Israel has refused to move to the next phase while the remains of the final hostage are still in Gaza. Trump and Netanyahu are also expected to discuss the latest developments on Iran. Its president is accusing Israel, the U.S., and Europe of waging a full-scale war on his country. Meantime, Israel is pushing for more strikes, claiming Tehran has begun rebuilding its missile stockpile. I'm Mike Emanuel. Now back to One Nation.
There's a cost involved with travel sports, for sure. And it's very hard for the average working family to send little Billy into the greatest, you know, travel baseball program, soccer program. There's no doubt about that. But the cost isn't the problem. We're the problem. Parents are the problem. The problem now is that parents are letting phones parent their kids and babysit their kids. So, yes, there's a cost involved. It is prohibitive for a lot of families for travel sports. But local youth sports, non-travel sports, still affordable, still doable. But mom and dad have to stop allowing the computer and the screens to babysit their children.
That was Craig Carden on last week's show, you know, from WFAN, where we tackled and debated what's behind the rising cost of youth sports. And you, the viewers at home, had a lot to say about the topic. Craig Garland, Massapequa Little League, does a fantastic job as president. He wrote me this, said, just saw your segment on youth sports. Craig Carden is wrong. Little Leagues are being impacted by the money grab travel teams. As a program, we have been sustaining our numbers at the rec level, but most programs are bleeding out. Arlene emails me and says, I'm writing to you as the former director of the Yorkville Youth Athletic Association, which was the largest youth sports league in Manhattan during my tenure. You're correct. Youth sports are in a state of crisis. While Craig made valid points regarding parental behavior, the issue goes much deeper than that. The real recreational killer is the unchecked expansion of travel sports. Isn't that interesting? The youth sports crisis coming to a light at a recent hearing. Watch.
How do we maintain opportunities for young people of different skill levels? I think soccer does a pretty good job of this. You have rec and select and competitive. But even then, sort of the rec leagues tend to winnow out as kids get older.
Parents ask me all the time, how does my kid make the elite team? And I think that's the worst word in sports is elite for little kids. And I just say, you know, just change the name of your team. That's what everyone else does. They just call their team elite. We have to keep as many kids as possible, as long as possible, in the best environment possible. The countries that do it best in sport development, they keep those kids. They're not making cuts at 6 or 7 years old. They're not forming competitive teams.
I understand it. I think 7 out of every 10 kids quit by ninth grade. Maybe that's the real problem, though. Parents are so focused on chasing elite teams and paying outrageous amounts of money, whether they have it or not, instead of letting kids actually learn the fundamentals and the skills they need at a young age. Look at the average price some families have to pay for their kid. Youth soccer, for example, recreational level, $100 to $600. Mid-level, $500 to $2,000. Elite, $2,000 to $10,000. So where do youth soccer go wrong? And how do we fix a system that's pricing families out of it and pushing the best players away from the sport? My next guest is a member of the National Soccer Hall of Fame, a longtime advocate for youth sports and a Fox Sports soccer analyst, the best in the business, Alexi Lalas. Alexi, I threw some numbers at you, but you know this. You know that soccer's getting way too serious and sports way too serious, way too young. How do you fix it?
Well, listen, you and I are from a previous generation back in the last century, in the 1900s, when a lot of kids grew up playing multiple sports. That ship has sailed. Specialization is a thing. And listen, I would love nothing more than every man, woman, and child in the United States were to be able to play free soccer or free sports in general. But that's not what the situation here is, because it comes back to the big question. And whether it's up on Capitol Hill or down at the local town is, who's going to pay for the free stuff? And what was interesting is what we don't want to do, I think, is vilify the men and women that work in the industry, that work not just in soccer, but in sports out there and make a living. I want them to make as much money as possible. They obviously have a product that is valuable, that people want to buy, and they will come running for that product. And where's the responsibility when it comes the parents, all right, that you are naive and you don't recognize that you actually have a much better chance of getting into a school, of getting financial aid if you're a good student than an actual athlete. And again, I want everybody to play soccer. I think it's important. I think from a practical perspective, it makes sense. From a physical perspective, it saves money. It makes you mentally and physically better going forward. But I am not willing to say, all right, you can't have your living. You can't give the public what they want and this product out there what they want. So it's not easy. We are in a very different time. Again, the specialization thing, it's hard to tell somebody, no, you can't do that.
You know, it's interesting, Lexi, because if you wanted to coach your kids, you're in the Hall of Fame, they'd go, I'm sorry, you're a parent. I don't want you to coach. Even though you know more about the soccer than almost anywhere in the country, they'd say, no, you shouldn't do it. But you would coach for free. So there are parents that are probably in the wrong place, and sometimes you're too tough on your kid. I got it. But I'd rather take those challenges when a coach comes and volunteers, because they also have a sense of being a parent, too, as opposed to the trainer. Just real thought on that before we talk about the World Cup.
Well, look, I mean, why are you playing sports? Why are you having your kids play sports? For me and my children, it's about learning those tools and having those experiences. The socialization for me is much more important than the actual kicking the ball. Obviously, getting outside, you've talked about getting off of your phone. All of those things, they're important. So until you are able to answer that in an honest way and then go from there, I think you're going to have a problem.
So, Lexi, let's talk about the World Cup. You're pumped up for it. I know we want to sell America on soccer and let the whole world see America, Mexico, and Canada do a great job in the world's most popular game. But I'm focused on the U.S. team. We open up with Paraguay at 9 o'clock Eastern time on June 12th at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. Then Australia on the 19th in Seattle. We're waiting for a third opponent. I think we can come out of this in first place. Can you handicap all three games for me? First, U.S.-Paraguay in Los Angeles in June. What are we thinking?
Yeah, so look, Paraguay, like you mentioned, Australia, and then a team to be named later. It's going to be a European team, possibly a Turkey A team. This is a winnable group. This is a group that I would have taken in any previous World Cups. You should expect your team in the summer of 2026 to win the group, to get out of the group, to go to the new round of 32. Because, again, a reminder to your audience, this is the biggest World Cup in history. 104 games, 48 teams, 11 host cities in the United States. It's three in Mexico, two in Canada, and this U.S. group right now, you got to be licking your chops right now. But they obviously have to go out and do it. They could certainly fail, but I'm really excited. I'm very bullish about this U.S. team relative to the group that they got.
And then they go to Seattle. In my view, some of the most anti-American activity I could see. Hopefully people come in from outside and hope and root for the U.S. team against Australia. That'll be at 3 o'clock Eastern time. That should be winnable. And then on the 25th, back in Inglewood. So when we look at people who want to go to the games, U.S. or not, we look at the price in 2018 in Russia between $70 and $1,100. In Qatar, between $69 and $1,600. And now the U.S., Canada, Mexico between $60 and $6,000. They're trying to bring that price down. What do we do about those prices, Lexi?
Well, it's been interesting to see how, you know, the uproar out there of the public. And again, if you're a capitalist, if you want a free market type of thing, the reaction of the market is important. And to see that reaction and what FIFA did was actually really interesting and kind of smart in that they gave it back to the countries, the federations, and said, here, we're going to give you an allotment of tickets that don't cost a lot. It's very limited, but you get to sort out who it goes to. Now, what are they really doing is moving that velvet rope, if you will, just to the countries, because now there has to be some sort of purity test to figure out, well, who the true fans are, because that's what they've allotted these tickets for. Mm-hmm. But what it really comes down to is this is bucket list type of stuff. This is something that people want. Right. This is something that people are willing to pay. And again, I would love nothing more than anybody, everybody that wants to go to a World Cup were able to do that. But that's not the reality of the situation.
It's a hot
ticket. This is a business.
Yep.
And this is how FIFA generates the money that they give to their membership. It runs it for years and years.
A lot of people are going to come up just to see Alexi Lalas do the scoreboard show. That's what I think. Alexi Lalas, don't sell tickets. Make yourself always be free access. Promise. Thanks so much, Lexi. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it. Next, the School of Hard Knocks founder Jim Stamoulian. He's here with us with the keys to success that he's learned from being with and interviewing the wealthiest, most successful people in the world. Don't move.
From being in Congress.
I think what would shock people here is that most members are afraid. They're afraid of criticism. Haters gonna hate, man.
What's the best advice you would give to your younger self?
If a bird lands on the branch, does the bird trust the branch or does it trust its wings? And the clue, I've seen many birds land on branches, but what I've never seen is a branch break and a bird fall and die. Trust your wings.
Taking advice from somebody who hasn't done what you want to do is almost insanity. Like, listening to people who haven't done the thing that you want to do, that makes you crazy.
I love that laugh. The School of Hard Knocks, inspiring the next generation to take risks, and my generation, too. At a time when employers, at least for the Gen Zers, are hesitant to hire them because we've seen some of the chaos on college campuses. We've been reporting it. We've seen this new push for this next generation for socialism. We've been recording it. But the co-founders of the School of Hard Knocks, they fly against that.
all under the age of 25. They're doing something different, setting out to find the secrets to success. And we're joined, or I should say rejoined, when actually they joined us last year on the set. And now they're getting more attention and even bigger names, if you can believe it. Here are some of the interviews since we last met.
Who am I here with today?
Tom Brady.
What industry did you decide to pursue a career in?
Movies, which encompasses almost every industry.
Who am I here with today?
My name is Dr. Shaquille O'Neal.
Will Smith in the building.
Accountability is a word that I think we need to ingrain in all of us all the time. I always tell everybody, you have to get outside of your comfort zone.
Where does your work ethic come from?
I enjoy going for that level of perfection, and I surround myself with people that have that same care.
If you see somebody that's doing better than you, steal what they're doing. I stole Michael Jordan. I stole Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I stole Muhammad Ali, and I put it inside my brain, and I created me. I think for those who are not financially literate, learn this word, annuity.
Suffering is a gift. The universe teaches through difficulty. God teaches through suffering and hard times.
So, in just the last year, they have not suffered. They are growing on social media from 4 million, which was very impressive, to 17 million worldwide, changing the way to learning their way along the way, financial literacy, getting a lot of career guidance, not only for them, but for all of you that are nice enough to click and watch them on various platforms. One of the co-founders of the School of Hard Knocks rejoins us, James Demoulian. James, great to see you.
It's great to be back here.
What are your thoughts seeing yourself with everyone from Shaq to Tom Cruise to Will Smith?
It's just a testament that consistency really is everything. I mean, I go back to the days we talked about it the last time I was on here. We were at the University of Texas. You know, whenever I wasn't in class, I was spending hours downtown just trying to go find people, get them to talk to us. And it was just one after the other. We posted every single day for 4 years. You know, I'll go back to, you know, we have 17 million followers now. When we had posted 400 times on Instagram, we had 50 followers. How many people do you know would keep posting after having 400 posts and 50 followers? Not many, but we just had the vision and the instinct to keep going.
Did you change your approach?
Of course. You know, one of the best things that you can do is not reinvent the wheels. So we studied what worked in the business niche, you know, and we ended up landing on, you know, the interviews being that we could be the one to extract the wisdom from some of the most successful people in the world.
James, am I right? Because we had a chance to talk. You didn't do this to be famous. I think you have a legitimate curiosity to what the secrets to success are.
100%. And also, you know, I wasn't real wild about the way that financial literacy is taught in school. I think there's a big lack of it. So I think that, you know, I've always been a curious person. I've learned that, you know, some of the most successful people, they are lifelong learners. And I wanted to be the one that could, you know, be that bridge from everybody around the world to the most successful people in the world.
You were doing ambush interviews, Mike Wallace style from the 1970s on 60 Minutes.
It was different.
Nobody. You just saw a guy or a woman in a nice car coming from a nice house. You go, I got to find out.
I got to figure out, how did you make your millions? How did you make it happen? And in doing that, it combines education and entertainment, and that creates virality.
And so now you're how old?
23 years old.
23 years old. And how well are you doing?
Very well.
How well is your company doing?
Incredible. Yeah.
Millions?
Multi-million dollar. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll do over $6 million this year.
Parents must be so proud of you. Okay. You have Instagram, 7 million. We can put this up. Facebook, 3 million. TikTok, 5.4 million. But the Chinese are spying on you. YouTube, 1.6 million. And you've walked around. You've walked pretty impressive. But you have some universal things you want to share with the whole audience, right?
100%.
All right, so you said, I love this line. Money loves speeds.
Yes.
What do you mean?
Well, think about the richest people in the world. I've got a contact list full of billionaires. I guarantee you, if I text them, they're responding within 5 minutes. They're quick. They don't procrastinate. They take massive action. It's very important.
So the more important you are, it's not an excuse saying I'm so busy. If it matters, you'll get back to them quickly.
100%.
All right, it says if you can't sell, you can't scale. What do you mean?
The richest people in the world, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, they are still selling themselves to this day. So I know that we're talking about sales in regards to a product or a service, but I think the most important thing is the ability to sell yourself. Go back and watch my interviews where I am ambushing those people and they're trying to get away. Watch how I objection handle. It's because I'm selling myself to them. If you know how to sell, you'll never go broke.
And you can't fear rejection.
Never. Every no is one step closer to a yes. I live by that.
Mark Cuban's always said that if I could tell him to do one thing, it's to sell. Because right. If you have a great product, if you can't explain it, you can't sell
Listen, sales cures everything. And one more other thing is sell it first and then figure it out. Everybody thinks that they have to have this perfect product, this perfect service. Brother, you need revenue. You need cash flow. You need to go get some clients and customers. If you sell it, you get the cash flow, you'll figure it out.
Relationships open doors that money can't.
people will take you places that money can't. I mean, I am willing to say, we talked about college. If you have one good relationship, you're coming out of school, that will take you further than any college degree. I stand on that.
All right. Also, you mentioned focus is, creates fortune. Some people are too spread out, got too many ideas. Get one.
Do you know what focus stands for? Follow one course until successful. You have to focus. I'm a firm believer in focus, and, you know, it's very important.
Obsession like that you have beats talent.
You got to be maniacal about what you do. I mean, I think about any billionaire, whether it's Todd Graves with chicken fingers or Michael Rubin with Fanatics. I mean, these guys are obsessed. And same thing the way that I do in my interviews. It's like I really want to get this knowledge and create great content.
So your generation doesn't have the best reputation. I just wanted to take a look at this headline. Hiring managers, prize achievements, learning and work, today's youth value, pleasure and individuality. Is Gen Z unemployable? You're Gen Z. Yeah. I know you're not, you personally don't fit that category, but to a lot of your peers, I'm not saying your friends, but a lot of your peers fit that description.
I think they do. And you brought up, you know, I think it was pleasure. What was the other thing?
Today's youth value pleasure and individuality.
Right. So when I think about that, I think about my generation. What's one of the biggest things that they struggle with? It's this concept of instant gratification. They think that it comes overnight because they see that person on social media with the Lamborghini. So social media can be a blessing and a curse. It depends what you're consuming, who you're listening to ultimately. So I think that there definitely is a lot of, you know, our generation that does fit into that category. But we're also the generation where I think that we work a lot smarter and not harder. And it's because of, you know, those iPhones that we have and the technology that we have in today's world.
Right. But you also should surround yourself to people like you.
You have to.
Right?
You absolutely have to.
Pick your friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They always say, you know, you hang around with five millionaires, you'll be the sixth. You hang around with five bums, you'll be the sixth bum.
Great to see you, James.
Brian, as always.
It's been fun tracking all your success.
Thank you,
and
Mark.
You can learn so much by following them on social media. By the way, follow me on social media. You don't mind, do you? James, someone else could follow us.
Come on, let's go.
All right, you got me at Rumble, Instagram, X, and Facebook, and also on the Culper Club exclusive video there. Don't move. All right, before we go, I want you to watch my brand new season on Fox Nation of What Made America Great. It's hosted by me. Five special episodes. Here's a sneak peek.
This is right where Ethan Allen, Benedict Arnold, and the Green Mountain Boys stormed into the fort early in the morning of May 10th. They move into this parade ground with their guns facing in every direction because they're anticipating that when the British see that they're coming in, they're going to fight back. And they wait a few moments before realizing that everyone's fast asleep.
Yeah, you're going to love that and the other four, I promise, including a visit inside NORAD, who, when they're not helping us win wars, also helps Santa land his sleigh. The entire season can be caught on Fox Nation. Go to foxnation.com if you don't have the app already. That is it for us tonight. I want you to listen to my radio show Monday through Friday from 9 to noon. We always have great guests. It's always exciting. Be sure to catch me on Fox and Friends every day between 6 and 9. Now I have a mission for you. Have a fantastic New Year, a great New Year's Eve and day, and keep it right here on Fox News. And always remember, whatever you do, stay within yourself.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan, equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of network speed. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.